AM 570 KLAC, 98.7 KYSR, HD2.
Los Angeles.
Available anywhere using the iHeartRadio app. AM 570, an LA sports icon.
Fred Rogan is here tonight.
Decades on your television covering Los Angeles sports.
Fred Rogan, huge in Los Angeles.
The Dean.
I'm the Dean.
Fred Rogan.
Weekdays before Petros and Money.
A USC All-American.
USC's Rodney Peete.
An NFL quarterback.
Absolutely perfectly delivered by Rodney Peete.
Available on the iHeartRadio app or on AM570LASports.com.
This is Rogan and Rodney.
All right, let's go. Fred Rogan and Rodney Peete on AM 570 LA Sports. All right, so Rodney, last night on NBC, we had the Raider game, and not a very good game at all. I mean, Raiders, no. DeSean Jackson, when he fumbled that ball, that pretty much ended the game for the Raiders. Derek Carr wasn't sharp last night. Just a bad game. So anyway, we come on afterwards, and of course, we have the challenge. And since we had that game, first thing we talked about was that game. And I said to Petros, do you believe that the Raiders are still LA's team? I didn't think it was an unfair question. It's something you and I, Eric, we've all talked about this. And, you know, he goes, oh, you know the answer to that. Of course, you know. I said, no, you say it. I want to hear what you think. And he goes on to say, yeah, that the Raiders are LA's still team. Now, we know that SoFi with the Rams, almost full to capacity every game. So the Rams certainly have returned and made an imprint. But after we said that last night, some people on Twitter, Franco El Tanco, a member of the Rambly, and some others, basically took me to task by even asking that question. I want to start with this today. Is that an unfair question?
No, not at all. Is it an unfair question? And some would argue that the Raiders still are LA's team and will be LA's team for a while. No, not even close to being an unfair question. What are we talking about? When you take a poll, I think who's your favorite football team here in LA? I think most people would still say the Raiders. Now, the Rams are gaining. I mean, have been gaining and are close right now. And if not, if they keep winning and they ended up going to the Super Bowl this year, they could surpass the Raiders. But the Raiders, from the moment even before they came down from Oakland the first time, and then were here for all those years, that fan base was incredible and it's never left. And there's a mass exodus from LA folks going to Vegas every time there's a home game, whether people got tickets or not, they're going to Vegas for the Raider game. So to suggest that the Raiders are still LA's team is not an odd question at all.
All right, so that'll bring us to this, because we had Austin Eckler on last night. Of course, the Chargers lost and did look very good in losing. And he said, you know, I have been here before. I know what this is like. We're on the fence. And right now, we can go either one way or the other. I mean, he was just really honest about it, and I appreciate that. And we love Austin Eckler. And it got me to thinking, so if the Raiders still have this large footprint and the Rams are making an imprint, the only way the Chargers have grown, there's no denying that. But really the only way they're going to be relevant is to win. And now they find themselves in this very difficult position. So I guess what I'm wondering, if they want to become more relevant, don't they have to win?
What are you asking me?
Yeah. Or
you know the answer to this, right? I mean, you're not saying this without knowing the answer to it.
Well, I think I know the answer, but I'd like to
hear. No, you do know the answer. You do. It's a rhetorical question, Fred. Of course you know the answer to it. Yes, Chargers, more than any other team here, has to win. They have to be in the conversation of the playoffs every single year until they build that up. They're the outsiders looking in. They're the angels of LA sports, right? So they have to be on the outside looking in. Look, as prestigious as a program and as history has shown us what they've done in the past with USC, when USC doesn't win, that Coliseum is empty. So, and USC's been here forever. So yes, the Chargers absolutely have to win in LA. We say it over and over again. You got not only are you competing with the Chargers in town, but you're competing, or Chargers are competing with the Rams in town. They're competing with the Lakers, the Dodgers, SC when it's going good. All those teams they gotta compete with. So yeah, to be relevant, you absolutely have to win in this town. You know, answer your question, Fred.
All right. Well, you brought up USC, so it got me to thinking. Over the weekend, a guy sends me a message, and he says, "What are your thoughts on the USC head coach, and who do you think it'll be, and how much are people talking about it?" And I wrote back, and I said, "To be honest with you, at this point, they have zero relevance in the market. It's like they don't exist. If they don't win, or if they're not exciting, there's zero buzz about them. And there's a good possibility they won't even be bowl eligible this year." Can you remember a time where USC has seemed less relevant?
2 years ago.
Fair. Okay.
No, not like this, though. Not like this, where, you know, it started with, even with Clay Helton still being there, I think it started with some excitement, the way they kind of played during the pandemic and having a lot of guys come back, and they, basically won a lot of games, but then, you know, call it pandemic or not, but people felt like, okay, this year with the full season, full crowd, this is, you know, stable at a lot of positions. They should be pretty good. And then it wasn't. And the coach gets fired and it just became ugly. Then some ugly losses at home, I think, is the big thing that people have taken away from this year. When you lose and get blown out by Stanford and you get blown out by Oregon State at home, it makes it very difficult for fans to get excited about it. Yeah, and I think people have turned the page to, let's figure out who our next coach is and let's get ready for next year.
Fred, I can answer your question. You asked, when's the last time USC has been less relevant?
Yeah.
When Petros played. He could tell you that, by the way. He says himself he was the captain of the worst football team in the history of USC.
That's true.
And looking back from 96 until 2001, 2001 was Pete Carroll's
first year. Yeah, that was a bad stretch.
Rodney, they won six games a year, essentially.
Yeah,
1 year in 98, stretch. They won eight. But yeah, it was basically from 96 to 2001 was their worst stretch.
Yeah, it was a bad stretch. Paul Hackett years, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Paul Hackett's wife, when she called me and yelled at me.
Wait, why?
Oh, no, wait. Remind us of that story, Fred, please.
I told you. You don't remember it?
No.
When I wanted...
You got so many of these where people hate you and call you, whether it's animals or people, Fred, that,
right.
That we sometimes lose track.
All right, so I went on, and I was told that Paul Hackett was going to be fired. Okay? So I went on and reported that. USC is going to make a change in their coaching staff, and Paul Hackett is going to be fired. I reported that on Channel 4. Because I knew it to be true. Phone rings in the office. I answer the phone. Woman says, "Hello, I'm Paul Hackett's wife." I swear to God.
What did you think first? We think it was a prank? What did you think it was?
If I thought it was a prank, very quickly I realized it wasn't a prank. Because this woman was mad. And I'm not saying she was shouting. That's unfair. Let's say she was very animated in her defense of Paul Hackett and asked, why would I say something like that? That's what she kept saying. Why would you say that? Why would you say that? I said, because I was told. Who told you? Well, I can't say that, but I know it to be true. You're nuts. And she was very upset with me. She hangs up. What happens? Next week he's fired. She never called me back. I thought she'd call and say, well, you were right. She never called me back.
Never called and said, oh, my bad.
No, she never called and said, my bad.
I was just playing.
She never heard from her again. Yeah, but I remember the Paul Hackett years all too well and Mrs. Hackett's phone call to me.
Oh, no, Freddie.
Oh, yeah.
Did you, were you nice about it? Was she yelling at you? What did you say back to her when she said, why would you say that? Did you just say it's true? I mean, this is before it was announced, though, right?
Right. I said, yeah. I know it to be true. I know it to be true. And I also said, I'm sorry, but I know it to be true. And that's why I reported that. I said, that's what I do. And then I gave her the old, don't shoot the messenger. You know, that's always the old line in media. Don't shoot the messenger. I didn't make the decision. I just report it. That's like, remember Cookie Rojas? When he managed the Angels. You remember, Kevin?
I remember the name.
I don't even know if you were alive.
I know the name Cookie Rojas, but I couldn't tell you anything about him or his tenure, to be honest.
I think it was back in the 80s.
Wow.
Okay. So I find out that Cookie Rojas is going to be fired. So I go on. And I say, the Angels are going to fire Cookie Rojas. He's not going to come back next year. They're going to make a decision. They're going to make a change. Okay? And people are saying, how do you know that? Even at the station, I said, because I do. Because I was told. Okay. So I'm driving home from work. And these were the days, if you had a phone, it was in your car. Remember those, Rodney?
Yep.
You didn't have the cell phones.
Right.
Right. You had it in your car. It's 11:40 at night and the phone rings. I'm thinking, who's calling me at 11:40 at night? It was Mike Port. Mike Port was the general manager of the Angels at the time. So he goes, hey, I heard you a lot. I heard you tonight, and you said Cookie Rojas is going to get it. I said, yeah, I did say that. Is he? Is he? He goes, well, let me tell you something. I'm just going to be honest with you. You're going to have to go along with me on this. I said, okay, what do you have to say? He goes, you're right. You're absolutely right. You have it. He's not coming back next year. He's done. I said, okay. Thank you for calling. He goes, and tomorrow morning we're going to deny it. We're going to deny it, and we're going to say, we have no idea why you would say that. We have no idea where you would come up with something like that. And that we're basically going to attack you for saying it. He goes, but you're right.
What?
You're right, but that's what we're going to do tomorrow. And you should know that. You're right, but tomorrow, this is what we're going to do, okay? I said, well, okay, thanks. Sure enough, the next morning, they deny it. They don't know where I came up with it.
They're ripping you?
Oh, yeah. And people around town are ripping me, thinking I'm making stuff up and that I'm just creating things. That I have no credibility. And why would I say something like that? He called me back. Because I told you we were going to do that. By the way, you're right. I said, okay. I went off to the Olympics in Seoul, right?
Wait. So did you go on?
No.
When they did not, after that, you didn't go on air?
No.
You didn't say anything about it, but did you have an opportunity to go on air after they told you, you're right, but we're going to say this?
Could I have?
They responded in the morning, right?
No, they responded at night. They told me right after I said it.
Oh, okay. They were going to respond.
And then they called me in the morning and said, we told you we were going to do that, but you're right.
So that day after they called you back, the next day, you didn't go on air and respond to that?
No, I just sat there because I knew I was right. I figured, okay. I go off to the Olympics in Seoul, Korea. I'm in Seoul. The phone rings. They found me anywhere I was. We just fired Cookie Rojas. So I was right. I was right.
They called you?
Yeah. They said, we want to let you know we're going to fire Cookie Rojas now.
Why would they do that?
I think what he...
Why wouldn't they just be quiet about it? And not say anything and just let you have that moment and whatever. But by them saying it, denying it, knowing that they were going to fire him probably a day later, 2 days, whatever they did.
It was probably a month later.
A month later.
Yeah.
But why would they? It just made them look bad. Why would they do that?
Well, I think what it was is he wanted to acknowledge I was right because I had it. He couldn't figure out how I had it, but I did. Because I knew somebody in the Angel front office had told me that I had it. So he wanted to give me that respect. But I think in turn, because he gave that to me, he wanted me to let them have their respect and do it their own way. So I always remembered that. Yeah, I could have gone on and go, he called me and he told me. I thought, no, no.
So you think that they probably waited that month just so they could save face a little bit and try to say, oh, you know, see, that story died down. Fred wasn't right after all. We didn't fire him for him. You know, the days went by thinking people might have forgot what you had said.
And yeah.
We'll let him month because they probably had it in their mind we're going to fire him right away. But after you came out with that story and they denied it, then they couldn't do it right away.
Yeah.
They had to let it marinate for a little bit.
You're probably right. Yeah, I kind of caught him off guard.
Yeah.
All right, I'll tell you one more.
Wow.
One day I'm down at the forum. And I'm sitting outside the PR director for the Kings. I can't remember who the coach was. Okay, so I'm sitting out in the hallway in a chair waiting to go in. And the door's open, so I'm just sitting there. And somebody's in the office, right? So I'm sitting there, and the conversation is getting louder. And back then, I could actually hear. Now, I can't hear anything. But back then, I could hear. So I'm sitting there waiting to go in, let's say, at 2:30. And the conversation is louder and louder. And the conversation turns into, yeah, we're going to fire him. We're going to fire him.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming. We're going to fire him. And I'm thinking, huh, well, the Kings are struggling.
Were you in a, you know, kind of when you went in the wrong door?
No, I was supposed to be there this time. Honest to God, I was supposed to be there. And they're going, well, we're going to fire him. We're going to fire him. I went, oh, okay. All right. We're going to fire him. The general manager walks out of the office, looks at me, and looks like he has seen a ghost. Looks like, oh, my God. Because they were going to fire the coach, and I was just sitting there. And I heard him say, we're going to fire him. So he walks away, looks at me like I'm a ghost. Like he's a ghost, he's gone. I go into the PR guy's office. I go, how you doing? He goes, fine. He goes, how long have you been here? I said, oh, about 20 minutes. He said, where are you sitting? I said, oh, right outside the door. He said, well, the door was open. I said, I know. He goes, did you hear the conversation? I said, yes. He goes, oh, my God. Whatever you do, please don't say anything. Don't say anything. I went, well, okay. I mean, I love the Kings. I'm a hockey guy. Please, we beg of you, don't say a word. I said, I won't. I will give you my word because I just happened to overhear it. Before I had a chance to say it, they fired him that afternoon.
Oh, they did?
2 hours later.
They didn't trust you, Fred. They didn't trust you to hold that down. Fred's going to go on at 5 o'clock.
Like 2 hours later, gone. Because I was sitting there and overheard the whole thing. Oh, my God. Rodney.
All right, I'm going to beg you one this last time, Fred. Please don't say anything.
Oh, my God.
He walked away and said, that son of a bitch is going to say it.
Boom, gone. 2 hours later. I used to, you know, when Jerry Buss owned both the Kings and the Lakers, Jerry West was running the Lakers. Jerry West is the best. So I'd be down there, and Jerry Buss sold the team to Bruce McNall. Mm-hmm. If people remember the story, and yep. Wayne Gretzky came in, yep. And then McNall.
Had his little issues,
like
right?
An embezzler or whatever. And Bruce is a great guy, by the way. He just, you know, kind of went south on him for a while. And I would sit down there, and just as all of this stuff was going to go down with Bruce McNall, and no one knew it. No one knew anything about it. Jerry West says to me, come in here and sit down for a minute. Now, he's running the Lakers, but, I mean, their offices are right there. They're all next to each other.
Yeah.
And the great thing about Jerry West, if you interview Jerry West, Rodney, you can do an interview with Jerry West, who's the best guy, for an hour. You can talk to him for an hour.
Right.
When the camera turns off, now the fun begins. Now you're going to hear the stories.
Right.
All the stuff. I mean, you literally could talk to the guy for an hour, and he'd be fascinating. And, okay, thanks, Jerry. Good, okay. Now the good stuff starts. And then he tells you all kinds of things. So he says to me, come on in here. Got a minute? I said, sure. I sit down. He goes, how's everything fine? He says, Just like this. Huh. What do you know about the Kings? I went, I don't know. What do I know about the Kings? He goes, well, if I was you, I'd get ready to know some stuff.
Get ready to know some stuff.
And I said, what kind of stuff? And he said, oh, you're going to know stuff. I'd be ready. I'd be ready if I was you. And I said, oh, okay. And he goes, what do you know about Bruce McNall? Because
This wasn't the same time they were firing the coach.
No, this is a different time.
This is a different time. Okay.
Because our offices were still there. He goes, what do you know about Bruce McNall? I said, he's a great guy. I love the guy. He goes, He's a great guy. I keep my eye out. Oh, my God. And sure enough, all hell broke loose. And that was it for Bruce McNall, who's still a great guy. But it was like, people will tell you stuff. I don't even know how we got started on this. Oh, it was the Paul Hackett thing. Yeah. And I always, don't blame me. It's not my fault. I'm just reporting what I find out. People are interested. Oh, God, but some people really, really get upset.
Well, you built that too, Fred, where you got people like Jerry West and other people around town, especially you've been in this market for such a long time that, you know, like you said, when the cameras go off, it feels like, and you've been good about things off the record.
Always.
I think, you know what I'm saying? So that gives people a level of comfort and trust. Even though you know certain things, you won't go out there and spin it like a lot of people. We talked about this last week, where people are so quick to try to be right or try to be first rather than being right. And you lose a lot of people's trust that way. But that's, I know for you, especially back in those days, it wasn't easy because it wasn't social media. It was, you know, it was
us. We
you
were
guys
ones.
Reported it. You yeah. guys were the ones that people know. Hard to keep those secrets, you know, under your vest and not report it, because you know, there was competition. There is competition.
Oh, yeah.
So you wanted to be in the know and know things. And hey, I got word this is happening. But to be able to bite your tongue, it takes a lot.
You know, it's funny, since we've worked together, I think we've done the show 5 years now.
Yeah.
I can't believe we're both still employed after 5 years of doing the show. But, and
what do you mean? Because of things we know?
Well, for any number of reasons, yes, Rodney. But, you know, since we've done the show together, for both of us, honestly, because we will talk about stuff
that
we don't talk about on the air.
Yes, yes.
You know,
a lot of stuff. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we know stuff that's going on. And sometimes, to be fair, you know, we'll hint at things and spin them a certain way without burning anybody or actually saying it.
Yeah.
And that's why when we sit here all the time and we say some stuff and people go, you're wrong. No. Where'd you find that out from? That's right. Not right. You guys, we always say the same thing. You know, we talk to a lot of people that you probably don't talk to.
Right.
We know a lot of people that you probably don't know. You know, if we report on a guy's injury and when he might come back, and we speculate, nah, I don't think he'll be back. I don't think he'll be back. Well, he said he could be back in 3 weeks. Well, I don't think he's going to be back.
Yeah.
Do you actually think we're making that up? Do you actually think we sit here and when we have information, we just make it up to make it sound good? Do you really think that?
No, it is.
I mean,
it's interesting. Yeah, because obviously, like I said, you just alluded to it. We have relationships. Both you and I are relationship people. And we have a relationship, especially in this town.
Yeah, well,
we have relationships that a lot of people aren't privy to. We may not come out in black and white and say certain things, but if we allude to something that we may have heard, it's a good chance we heard it. We know it.
From somebody that knows what they're talking about.
Right.
God, it makes me laugh. Just sitting here thinking about some of the stuff over the years and just the way you kind of dance around things. And people go, what's he talking about? That's not right. Guess what, folks? It's right. It is right. And because of the way we handle it, people still trust us and tell us.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for you as a guy that played with relationships in this market, it actually is a little tougher because you know an awful lot of people, and an awful lot of people tell you things.
Yeah.
If you allude to it, and those people listen to this show.
Yep.
If
they don't, they know people that do.
Right.
We'll get back to them.
Right. If you allude to something, if you suggest something, if you kind of talk about it a certain way and just float it out there, you're cool. They're good with that.
Yeah.
If you turned around and said something.
Drop names, things like that. No, you never do that.
Because it would be over.
Right.
And not only, well, this guy won't tell me any more information, your relationship will be over.
Correct.
And that's why when you start that, I always try to pin you down and watch your screen.
Yes, you do. You do. You do.
Every chance I get.
And you know that key and that ball is locked, too, but you will try. And I love that because you got to try, Fred. You got to try.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
All right, so tonight the Lakers will try to beat the Bulls. And our insider Bill Oram will join us next. And by the way, he also has more. He spoke to Alex Caruso about exactly what happened with his deal with the Lakers.
Now, your chance to put $1,000 in your pocket. Text the nationwide keyword dollar to 200-200. You'll get a confirmation text and info. Standard data and message rates apply in this nationwide contest. That's dollar to 200-200. Good luck. Thanks for joining us on your ride.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Speaking of which, traffic.
Oh.
Oh, what a beautiful Monday. Rodney Pete, Fred Rogan. Hope y'all had a great weekend. I don't know if you had a chance to check it out, but I did. I watched Adele last night, one of my favorite artists. It was an evening with Adele, and she sang it from Griffith Observatory here in L.A. outside with the interviews throughout by Oprah. Just an amazing, amazing night. And I'm sure it'll be replayed all over the place on CBS or Peacock or whatever, or the Paramount or wherever. Yeah. They replay it. But it was amazing. If you like Adele, it was an incredible night of her singing and telling stories, and it was incredible.
I got to tell you.
No, she's dating Rich Paul now.
Oh, is she?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Clutch Sports Rich Paul. Yeah. They've been dating for a while.
I got to tell you something, though. You weren't the only one to watch that last night. Because, yeah. What are we, 10 weeks into the NFL season?
Yep.
So that means we had 10 challenge shows.
Uh-huh.
Last night was the only night it lost.
It lost
to Adele. Yeah.
To Adele.
Yeah. It lost
Adele.
To Adele. I looked at that and I went, what happened? Then I went, oh, okay, now I understand what happened. Uh-huh. Yeah, a lot of people watched that last night.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible.
Okay, eyes will be on Staples tonight as the Lakers take on the Bulls. And we bring on our NBA insider, Bill Oram. Bill, good afternoon to you.
Hey, guys. I did not watch Adele last night at Griffith Observatory, and I'm feeling I missed out. But maybe she'll be at the Laker game tonight sitting courtside with Rich again.
Wait, maybe.
Did you watch the challenge last night?
You know what, Fred? yes, I did, because I was at dinner in Manhattan Beach with my wife last night for my birthday.
Happy birthday, Bill.
And it was on the television at the restaurant, so they must not get better channels.
Oh, but, you see?
Hey, as long as the sound was down, you're good,
yeah,
right, Bill?
You're fine. Yeah, whose voice would pierce your brain more, mine or Petros? okay, Bill, can we start with the Alex Caruso piece you wrote? Because that was great. I mean, you've been all over the story. And the bottom line is, he would have taken less than the Bulls offered to come back to the Lakers, but they weren't willing to meet him halfway. Fair?
Yeah, I think you can say that. I mean, listen, the Lakers initially offered Alex Caruso $7 million a year for 3 years, $21 million over three. And that was less than Caruso was going to get from several teams. The Bulls, the Minnesota Timberwolves offered more. But the Lakers, you know, they were kind of set on that offer. Caruso went back to the Lakers and said, you don't have to match what the Bulls offered, which was 4 for $37. Would you do 2 for $20? And that essentially, you know, it's the same per year, or it's pretty close per year, but it would have given the Lakers less years of investment, and it would have kept his contract aligned with LeBron James, so they would have had cap space in 2023, which is really important to them. But, you know, they weren't willing to budge. And, you know, it's a really interesting question, because were the Lakers that scared of the luxury tax, or were they just that unwilling to go into the luxury tax for Alex Caruso? And then it gets into the question of, well, did they misjudge how valuable Alex Caruso was and how good of a player he is? Because you've seen it with the Bulls. I mean, he has been absolutely electric. If you're on social media, every single night after one of their games, you see a clip of Alex Caruso hounding the opposing team star, forcing a 24-second violation. You know, he's kind of doing it all defensively for the Bulls. Now, he's not, you know, he's never going to be a score-first guy. He's never going to be a guy you can count on to step up and score 20 points if you need it. But, you know, everything he was doing for the Lakers, he's now doing in kind of a heightened sense for the Bulls, because he's playing 27 minutes a night. And you saw him start last night essentially a power forward for Chicago, and they beat the Clippers and snapped that 7-game winning streak. So it's kind of a perfect storm from a narrative standpoint that that not only is Caruso playing well, but the Lakers are struggling, obviously only 8-6 through their first 14 games. And they aren't good at the things that Caruso does. Like, they are a bad perimeter defensive team. They don't have guys who, you know, dive on the floor and, you know, make those hustle plays. I mean, Frank Vogel said last week in what I thought was a really telling comment, you know, they don't have guys who are just, he was asked about players doing the dirty work, and he said, we aren't instinctively doing that. We have to learn how to do that. They have to be coached to do that. Alex Caruso, you know, I mean, that was his thing, you know? I mean, he's the guy who's diving on the floor, you know, 15 times a game, because that's how he's wired. And so the Lakers obviously miss what Caruso did. He's been great in Chicago. And it's just, you just sit around and you watch this team and you think, gosh, couldn't they use Alex Caruso?
What do you think, Bill, in your heart that went down? Was it them underestimating Alex Caruso and his worth? Was it the Taylor Horton Tucker situation that they, you know, they didn't want to keep both? Or, I mean, was it just about the money? I mean, what do you think in your mind that they could kind of move on without him? Because he fit with LeBron so well that you think that LeBron may have went to bat for him as well.
You know, I think it's all those things, Rodney. I think it's the fact that the luxury tax is a real thing. You know, the Lakers were trying to avoid getting too deep into the luxury tax. They had the other young guard in Talen Horton Tucker, who's a different kind of investment, but does, you know, you hope can grow into doing some of the things defensively that Caruso does. And I do think that probably they did underestimate his value a little bit. I think they probably, I think Rob Pelinka, Kurt Rambis, the people who are kind of behind these decisions, you know, everything I've kind of heard is like, you know, Caruso wasn't, you know, their guy. I mean, you know, not to put it too harshly, I mean, they obviously made him an offer. They made him a good offer, you know, a multi-year offer. So they didn't tell him, you know, to take a hike, but, you know, I don't think that they valued Caruso and his skill set as highly as other teams around the league did. I think that they viewed him as a replaceable player. And you've heard Rob Pelinka say that they felt like with what they did in the offseason, that they were able to replace kind of what Caruso brought to the table defensively and, you know, with some of those instincts. And, you know, Kent Bazemore so far, you know, hasn't been it. You know, he was starting and now he's, you know, he was a DNP in the win last night against San Antonio. We haven't seen Kendrick Nunn, Trevor Ariza yet. So it remains to be seen how they're going to fit. The one thing I will say though, I mean, listen, if it was truly a Talen Horton Tucker versus Alex Caruso decision, and I don't think it was, I think on the first day of free agency, the Lakers hoped that there was a way to keep both. But if it really came down to you were going to have one and not the other, Talen Horton Tucker at least made a spirited case for himself yesterday against San Antonio. I mean, he had a really nice game, not just, you know, scoring 17 points, shooting 50% from the field, but, I mean, he was great defensively. He had a steal. He had a block. He had took two charges. THT is a guy they need to be a high-end rotation player this year at 20 years old. And that's asking a lot of him, but he has been paid like somebody that can come do that. And it was a good first performance by him after missing the first 13 games with a hand injury.
Bill, you know, now reports are LeBron's return could be sooner than later. At first, it was about a week. Then you talked to the former strength coach, and he said, well, no, this thing could be 4 to 6 weeks. Now it's sooner than later. I guess what I'm thinking is we talk about age, we talk about susceptibility to injury, and he's already been injured. Now, if you're going to miss games, miss them early and not late. But to me, this is just a continuation of what we have been speculating, that he's going to get hurt, not because he wants to, but because of his age.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting situation where, you know, I've not seen any indications that LeBron's going to play tonight. You know, Wednesday in Milwaukee is a marquee game. Like, you'd love to see him on the floor if he's able to go against Giannis and the defending champions. But at this point, I mean, if he misses tonight, that'll be 7 games. You know, he will have missed 9 of the first 15 games. And you're like, well, okay, fine. If that's all he misses, you can live with it. But it does sort of set the tone for a 19th season when the little things are taking their toll. You know, he had the ankle pain early on. Like, that was only a 2-game absence. But then you add this. You know, is this going to be a thing we see throughout the season? And if it is, how is this Lakers team that needs so much time together to grow, to develop, to get to know each other still, going to look by the time the playoffs get here if LeBron's been in and out of the lineup?
Yeah, and doesn't that make it difficult? Because, you know, you mentioned Taylor Horton Tucker, you know, the other day playing well, scoring 17 points, actually playing well on defense. We saw the other day Malik Monk kind of go off and shoot the ball well. Is this going to be a thing where they keep playing with the lineups? And it's hard because LeBron is not in the game consistently for Frank Vogel to kind of figure out what starting lineup or what group on the floor works best.
Yeah, and it's far from ideal because, I mean, listen, like, Frank Vogel told us in the preseason that he did not want to be a team that was constantly tweaking the starting lineup and making, having a rotating starting lineup. Well, kind of out of necessity, he has had that, you know, because of who's been available. And then yesterday, finally, you know, the last 2 games, the Lakers have gone small, and yesterday started Carmelo Anthony at the 4. I think that's what they're going to do probably going forward. I mean, we reported in the preseason that the Lakers were planning on starting Ariza, Ellington, and then AD, LeBron, and Russ. And that's a small lineup, and it moves AD to the center. You know, DeAndre Jordan, really, I'm not sure where he fits on this team if you go small. I mean, he wasn't, you know, making a huge difference as the starting center. He's had a few good games. But I think, by and large, you know, you can look at him as sort of probably the guy who gets cut out here, because I think that, you know, the Lakers do need to have an identity. The Lakers need to have an identity outside of LeBron. And they are most potent with AD at the center. AD is willing to play center. He said coming into the year he was willing to start at center, which is a bit of an evolution for him. So I think that you need to lean into that. And, you know, whether LeBron is on the floor or not, you know, Carmelo Anthony sort of slots in as the fake LeBron in that situation, you know, the guy who you can sub in and out when LeBron is not in the lineup. And you start building your identity kind of not dependent on whether LeBron is on the floor or not. And I think that that's what you're going to see going forward.
All right. Well, tonight we've got the Lakers and the Bulls at Staples. Bill, thanks for jumping on as always. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks so much for having me.
They'll know your squad. Little know your Lakers.
Come on. Come on now.
Want to give a prize for this one, Rodney?
Yeah, let's do that, Fred.
All right. 866-987-2570. First caller, you jump on here, you'll play Rodney and Ronnie. That's coming up next.
Daddy.
Bye, Daddy.
Maybe you're heading out of town.
I need to get the hell out of here.
Here's the thing.
You're never truly away from Dan Patrick, Colin Cowherd, Rogan and Rodney, and Petros and Money.
Together.
Just go to AM570 LA Sports on the iHeartRadio app. Listen to live shows, podcasts, and catch up on anything you missed.
Best friends forever.
And now another Rogan and Rodney.
Oh, yeah!
Afternoon Delight.
My stove lit it up for me this morning. Ooh, don't get me started. I just spent my last bit of finances recorded. Sinking is an icebox where my heart is. Roll a whole lot, Marion. Get so high you can't touch me. You can't touch me. Centipede, my speed, take time with the hate when the motherfucker
tries. Yes! Roller put KD on the rise. I've been trying to feel something. Last my little brother in August and all. Am I supposed to feel no body like now? Caution when you put it on the facade. Today's afternoon delight is I deserve by Smino.
Thank God Smino's on today.
Yes. The St. Louis singer rapper dropped this single late last week. The song is fourth single that he's released this year as fans greatly anticipated the follow-up to his 2020 project entitled She Already Decided. In an Instagram post after the release of this track, the 30-year-old MC did write that his third studio album is indeed on the way. However, he did not provide a potential release date. Again, today's afternoon delight is I Deserve by Smino.
Rogan and Rodney Roulette. Know your squad.
America's number one selling and most awarded Bloody Mary brand, Zing Zang, now comes ready to drink. Full-strength cocktails in a can for you to enjoy this weekend. Zing Zang, always bold, always ready. Go to zingzang.com to find out where to stock up. Please be so kind and Zing Zang responsibly. All right, Jesse in Long Beach, you ready to go?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, it's Know Your Squad. Today the squad is the Lakers. And please, please do not answer until I've given you all five choices. If you answer prior to the fifth choice, you'll be locked out. Ronnie, you ready?
Greetings, Rogan and Rodney. I'm ready to play.
Who holds the team record for most block shots in a playoff game with 10? Shaquille O'Neal, Wilt Chamberlain, Andrew Bynum, Anthony Davis, or Anthony Anderson?
Wilt Chamberlain.
Anthony Davis.
Nope. Jesse got it. He said Andrew Bynum. So Jesse is correct.
Wow. Who knew?
Right.
I didn't think he even blocked 10 shots before.
Well, he did, and you guessed it right. So there you go.
All right.
Well, where are you? What is wrong with your connection?
Yeah, what in the world?
I'm in my car having a tuna sandwich.
All right, well, tuna's healthy.
Tuna sandwich. Tuna sandwich.
And a jalapeno pepper.
Is it from Subway?
No, my girlfriend made it for me.
Okay.
Tastes pretty good.
Okay.
All right.
I like that. A girlfriend that cooks for him, makes a sandwich.
Like mama's love.
Love it.
Okay.
That is big time right there.
Of the players who attempted at least 20 three-pointers this season, who has the highest three-point shooting percentage at 47%? Carmelo Anthony, Avery Bradley, Malik Monk, Wayne Ellington, or Wayne Brady?
Carmelo Anthony.
Malik Monk.
Avery Bradley.
Ronnie. Carmelo Anthony is correct.
A little tardy on the... Oh,
no, it's the delay.
Buddy shot more than that.
Whoa.
All right. We don't know
where
are
you? Said. Where is he again?
He's in his car.
Tuna sandwich where?
He's in his car.
I'm in my car in Long Beach at work.
Oh. You work under a tunnel?
No, I actually work for aerospace.
Oh.
But I'm in my car.
Do they know you're in your car?
Well, I'm in lunch, so...
Okay.
He can do what he wants.
Right on.
Which of these players did not wear the number zero at some point in their Lakers tenure?
Nick Young. Not.
Did not.
Did not.
Did not. Nick Young, Orlando Woolridge, Kyle Kuzma, Carlos Boozer, or Carlos Mencia?
Carlos Boozer.
Boozer.
Oh. Rodney.
Okay, Rodney says he got it.
What do you
think,
Rodney?
Sounded like a tie. Sounded like a tie, Rodney.
Sounded like a tie to me, too.
Yeah, I think we got
to
check that, too.
We can run it back if you like.
I'm sorry,
wow.
Rodney.
All right. Sounds good to me.
You're out, Jesse.
Jesse. Good to you, huh, Jesse?
Because Jesse knows we throw out the question if it's a tie. So, here we go.
Hey, it's good to talk to Rodney.
Jesse, cool it. All right, here we go.
Here we go. Kyle Kuzma, Carlos Boozer, or Carlos Mencia?
Carlos Boozer. Daddy.
See ya.
Carlos Boozer.
Daddy. I don't think it was your dad.
I think we tied, Dad.
Yeah. I think, Dad, I think you tied.
Really?
Yeah. Sorry, Daddy. But Daddy didn't get that one.
I heard that one from me.
All right. It's going down as a tie. I'm sorry. Sorry, Dad.
That about a...
All right. Kobe Bryant holds the franchise record for most career three-point attempts with 5,546. Who was second in team history with 2,255 career three-point attempts? Nick Van Exel, Byron Scott, Rick Fox, Derek Fisher, or Antoine Fisher?
Derek Fisher.
Derek Fisher is correct.
Who got that one?
Yeah. That sounded like a tie, too.
I was waiting for Michael Cooper.
All right, Mike,
kidding me?
Michael Cooper was not in there, Jesse. I'm sorry. But.
Yeah.
That was a tie. You guys thought that was a tie, too?
Kevin, you going to check it?
Good Lord.
Let's take a listen.
Here we go. Hawks, Derek Fisher, or Antoine Fisher?
Derek Fisher.
Hawks, Fisher.
Derek Fisher.
Derek Fisher.
Daddy.
I think I might have a slight edge on you there, Rad.
You guys are both. That's a tie. What's wrong with you?
Oh, my God. That's absolutely.
I'm like, Fred, my hearing's bad, too, at this point, but still, it's not that bad.
Eminently.
At least Fred got the machine right.
Yeah, thank you.
Have you, though, Jesse?
Thank you, Jesse. Daddy, sorry. Yeah. Here's your next one, Daddy, to get in the game. Kobe Bryant led the Lakers with an average of 6 assists per game in their Western Conference Finals series win over the Blazers in 2000. Who was second on the team with an average of 4.3? Ron Harper, Derek Fisher, Brian Shaw, Shaquille O'Neal, or Patrice O'Neal?
Brian Shaw. Harper. Derek Fisher.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Jesse. Jesse's correct. It was Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah, he was a good passer.
Yeah, he was. So here's where we're at. Final question. Jesse, if you get this, you win today.
Whoa.
Ronnie, if you get it, you tie Jesse. Rodney, if you get it, you're on the board. Good luck. Who holds the Lakers' playoff record for most three-pointers made without a miss when he went 7-for-7 from distance? Kareem Rush, Robert Horry, Sasha Vujacic, Byron Scott, or Byron Nelson?
Sasha Vujacic.
Robert Horry. Rodney.
Of course I did. That's my third win.
What do you mean? No, it's not.
I got three of them.
No, you didn't.
It's tied.
You tied. So, Jesse, congratulations, you win.
All right.
Jesse, tuna sandwich.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure.
All right, Jesse, thanks for listening to the show, and thanks for having lunch with us today.
All right, I appreciate all you guys. I love listening.
Lock the doors and board the windows. The man is back from his exotic trip. Where he went, we'll find out. Eric Dickerson joins the show coming up.